further to the south, in Zimbabwe to be precise, millions have fled poverty and dictatorship, becoming economic and political migrants, as unemployment, inflation, lack of infrastructure, and recently political violence have created harrowing living conditions. It is estimated there are 3 million immigrants from Zimbabwe in South Africa alone, many of them just waiting for the current government to step aside before they can go home to rebuild and replant their beautiful and potentially resourceful country. But in the run-up to a presidential ballot in 2 weeks' time, anti-opposition violence has spiraled out of control, with many human rights groups and journalists sounding the alarm as the right to a free and fair election is being systematically stamped out. A just-released report by Human Rights Watch says the Zimbabwean government's campaign of violence and intimidation against the opposition movement for democratic change has extinguished any chance of a free and fair presidential runoff on June the 27th.
The report gives a comprehensive account of the violence that has been taking place in Zimbabwe since March 29.
Tisike Kazambala works for Human Rights Watch Africa Division, and March the 29th is the date of a contested election the opposition claims to have won and the ruling party has refused to acknowledge.
It documents victim and eyewitness testimonies of brutal violence committed by supporters of the ruling ZANU-PF party, army soldiers, war veterans and so-called youth militia against opposition MDC supporters and those perceived to have voted for the MDC on March 29, and the report itself is based on 3 missions that we undertook to Zimbabwe between the March 29 elections and June of this year, and we spoke to over 70 victims and witnesses.
Now, when you speak of victims, are we speaking of deaths as well?
Indeed. The report highlights serious, severe beatings, killings and torture, and so some of those who we spoke to were relatives of people who had been killed by ZANU-PF supporters, suspected police agents and army soldiers.
Just reading a summary of the report, I get the idea that the campaign, which is led by the government and its allies, is very organised. They have torture camps, they have so-called re-education meetings, all this to compel opposition supporters into voting for the present president. Am I correct?
Indeed, we discovered a very systematic campaign of violence that has been taking place in the rural provinces of Zimbabwe. Torture camps have been established by ZANU-PF and its allies across these provinces where people are abducted and taken to and severely tortured and forced to swear allegiance to ZANU-PF and to denounce the MDC. The re-education meetings we documented involved entire villages being summoned by senior-ranking army officers and ZANU-PF supporters, and then suspected MDC supporters being pulled out of the crowds and severely beaten before the entire village into what they called, they were being re-educated into voting for ZANU-PF and denouncing the MDC, hence the name re-education. And at these meetings, there have been very, very brutal beatings and torture that have taken place. In one meeting in Chiweshe, over 70 villagers were beaten and 6 of the men died from the beatings and torture.
I've been following the Zimbabwe tragedy for quite a long time, and often I've spoken about it to people I know, and the most common response is, but surely the vote is secret. How can they be compelled to vote for a determined candidate? How can this happen?
Well, the government has done this before. This is not the first time that the government has tried to influence the election outcome through widespread violence and other acts of brutality. What we know is that after the March 29 elections, what's actually been taking place, apart from the widespread violence, to instill fear so that people are afraid of voting, the government has also forcibly displaced thousands more people. And these people will not be able to return to their homes to actually vote, and that's a huge problem. But also, one element of this is that on March 29, the people of Zimbabwe made a decision to vote for change. This decision was not respected by the government of Zimbabwe. And what people are now being told is that we noted that you voted for the MDC, And that's because the results were posted outside polling stations. So it was clear to the ZANU-PF supporters which parts of the country had actually voted for the MDC. And this is what they're trying to do now, to instill fear and prevent people from voting again for the MDC. They're saying, we saw the results, we noted that you voted in these areas for the MDC, and now we have come to punish you. And if you do it again, we will punish you again. The title of our report is called Bullets for Each of You. And this is at another re-education meeting, soldiers told the people that we know you voted for the MDC, and if you do so again on June 27, we have a bullet for each of you, and we'll come back and kill you all. So that's what they're trying to do, to compel the people to vote against the MDC and vote for them.
Now, there's no press freedom in Zimbabwe, and journalists are barred from reporting the facts. But news has been leaking out continuously. And even today, the BBC said it's obtained documents suggesting that the military is actively involved in running the president's re-election campaign. Now, why is no one doing anything about it?
There seems to be a form of paralysis within the international community over what to do with the situation in Zimbabwe. And that's for a variety of reasons. As you know, Western governments have condemned and they've put travel sanctions in place and the asset freezes for those senior members of Robert Mugabe's government. However, of course, that is not enough. That has not been enough to prevent the government from continuing to carry out these abuses. Those who have the most influence, those who are most influential in Zimbabwe, the African leaders, have been taking a different approach, which has been more of a quiet diplomacy approach, behind the scenes, talking to Robert Mugabe, trying to convince him to take another path towards democracy. This, too, has not worked. And so it's become very difficult because it seems increasingly that the government of Robert Mugabe is impervious to any sort of influence from both African leaders, who one would assume have the most influence over him, and Western leaders who have tried their best, but with whom the divisions are so stark that there is no way they can have an influence over the situation. And so I think it's just a matter of continued engagement with the government of Zimbabwe, continued tough intervention with the government of Zimbabwe, a tougher line coming from the African leaders, pointing out that if the situation does not improve in the run-up to this election, that they will not endorse any such outcome. I think the crisis is such that is the kind of line that they should be taking right now on Zimbabwe.
At the moment, there are SADC and AU observers in the country. How effective are they?
Well, their effectiveness will only be gauged by how much access they demand to the countryside. Because, as our report explains, most of the violence has been in the rural provinces of Zimbabwe. Some of these places are now no-go areas because the youth militia, war veterans and ZANU-PF supporters have set up informal roadblocks, preventing people from leaving the areas and preventing the international community and local NGOs from actually entering the areas and accessing them. So not much is being reported in these areas. And the observers should be going in with a strong mandate, a tough mandate, to demand from the government of Zimbabwe access to these places so that they can provide protection to the people who are actually in these areas and reassure them that their vote is secret and that they can actually go out and vote. And that's going to be a difficult line, and that is where we'll judge the effectiveness of the observer teams.
Are you optimistic at all?
One always has to have some cause for optimism. If the African leaders can come together and take a tougher approach to the crisis in Zimbabwe, if the observer teams can go with their mandates and report accurately on the conditions on the ground, they can then at least put some pressure on Robert Mugabe. But to date, not enough pressure has been put on him to force him to take another path. But, you know, there's still hope. And there's still hope that the people of Zimbabwe will be so determined that they will go out and vote for the candidate of their choice, irregardless of the brutality that they've been put through.
It's really hard to sit back and watch what's going on in Zimbabwe and hear first-hand accounts and feel so helpless. Is there anything the ordinary person on the street can do to make his or her voice heard?
I think there is still scope for the ordinary person lobbying one's own government, for instance, to do more and to add to the pressure on Mugabe. That always helps. I think as long as the situation in Zimbabwe remains top of the agenda in the media, top of the agenda worldwide, with people continuing to express their concerns, it at least makes the people of Zimbabwe believe that the world is watching and that eventually there will be justice in their country and the perpetrators of these crimes will be held accountable. I think the worst thing people would do would be to ignore the situation in Zimbabwe and say that it's none of our business.
Can I ask you one last personal question? You yourself have travelled to Zimbabwe and you've met with the people and you've seen the land, a beautiful, beautiful land. What are your personal hopes for Zimbabwe?
Well, my personal hopes is that Zimbabwe will return to its former days of glory. When I speak to people there, you know, in the rural provinces, so many of them are still educated. You know, the literacy rate in Zimbabwe used to be almost 90%, and you've got such an educated class of people who have now been forced to eke out a living, you know, as vendors and as small-time traders. Many have fled Zimbabwe and are now in South Africa and, you know, working as cleaners when they used to be teachers or accountants. I think that's the saddest story in Zimbabwe, that these well-educated, literate people are being forced out of their own country while they should be in their country building it up. And my hope is that that's what's going to happen eventually, that Zimbabweans will be able to return to their country and rebuild it to its former days of glory, where they had a good education system and an excellent health system. It's my hope that returns.
That was Tisike Kazambala of Human Rights Watch, Africa Division.